Welcome to Success Story, the most useful podcast in the world. I'm your host, Scott D. Clary. The Success Story podcast is part of the HubSpot podcast network, as well as the Blue Wire podcast network. Now, the HubSpot podcast network has incredible shows like the MarTech podcast hosted by Benjamin Shapiro. The MarTech podcast is all about maximum value in 30 minutes or less. The MarTech podcast shares stories from world-class marketers who use technology to generate growth and achieve business and career success all in your lunch break. If you like any of these topics, you're going to love the MarTech podcast. Some of the topics are zeroing in on the ideal product price point, identifying loyalty plays for smart marketers, finding the line between sales and marketing and SaaS, extending the lifetime value of your customer. If these are topics that are interesting to you, go check out the MarTech podcast hosted by Ben Shapiro wherever you get your podcasts. Today, my guest is Nihal Advani. He is the founder and CEO of Qualsight. Nihal is a product and marketing expert. He spent his teenage years as an internationally ranked tennis player. However, after a college internship at Google, he followed his passion for technology. Upon graduation, he joined Microsoft, where he spent time in various marketing and data roles on high-profile teams such as Search or Bing, Display, and Microsoft Media Network. He left Microsoft, combined his entrepreneurial spirit and passion and interest in seeing and understanding the world by launching Qualsight, which is an immersive insights platform. They work with Fortune 1000, Fortune 500, Fortune 100. They help companies understand human behavior authentically and efficiently at scale. So we spoke about his entrepreneurial journey, leaving Microsoft to start his own company. His first version of Qualsight was actually a travel software company, and it pivoted and he iterated a couple times before he got to Qualsight. So we spoke about his first version of entrepreneurship, leaving Microsoft, hiring a dev shop, some lessons learned there, moonlighting at Microsoft so that he could bootstrap the business, all these great entrepreneurial stories and some ideas and hopefully insights for you if you're going to start your own thing, how you can do it and not get screwed by your dev shop, not worry about funding or financing or going to find money. He built out a company properly from the ground up without any outside capital at the beginning. We also spoke about some of the things that Qualsight does, which is consumer insights and market research. They do this for some of the largest brands in the world. So some thoughts on consumer insights, how to get consumer insights, how to apply them, some market research trends that some of the largest companies are looking for in consumer behavior. So if you do have customers, if you do have a CPG startup or you have a CPG company, he works with some of the largest ones in the world. So he has some great ideas on what you should look for and how you should be using and understanding consumer data and consumer behavior. Then we spoke about some lessons that he's learned building Qualsight, some of the innovation frameworks that he uses for his R&D teams, considering the fact that before Qualsight, there was a couple other companies he built out. Although he pivoted a few times, each one of those companies was successful in their own right. So he has a great framework for innovation. We spoke about some product development best practices that have set Qualsight ahead of the pack. We spoke about financing and fundraising. He's only taken on $3.5 million in 10 years. So how did he do that? How did he build his company without much external capital? And then lastly, we spoke about how Qualsight achieved that hockey stick growth. How did they find that product market fit and how did they scale? So let's jump right into it. This is Nihal Advani. He is the founder and CEO of Qualsight.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I've always wanted to start my own business, right? So in college, I dreamt about it a lot, thought about it, a gazillion ideas. Every single day, I was writing something down. But then I decided I wasn't ready yet, and I went to Microsoft instead. I was an intern at Google, decided to join Microsoft when I graduated and kind of said I'd kind of learn the ropes, you know, go to a bigger company, kind of get more experience under my belt, and then kind of start my own thing. So 5 years into Microsoft is when I quit. And it's kind of funny because we started off being very different from what we're today. We weren't even called the same thing. We were called Georama, and we were a travel startup. So I quit Microsoft to launch a travel startup. And today, as you know, we're called Qualsight, and we're an insights, a consumer insights software. So quite a big pivot along the way. In fact, a couple of pivots along the way, but yeah.
Why? So you're an engineer, right? You were working at Microsoft.
No,
you're not.
Okay. I was actually on the marketing side. I was always a techie kind of guy, but I was never, I wanted to do a, you know, a double major in computer science while I was in college, but I was a tennis player. And so I only could choose one. I picked business.
Very good. Okay. So you got, so you were in very technical companies, but you weren't technical yourself. So you're non-technical co-founder. So what was the, you mentioned like Qualsites has gone through all these different iterations and all these different versions and whatnot. So what was the first company you started? Why did you go into travel? What was the logic behind that? And how did you feel comfortable jumping ship and going into a company that you've, in an industry you've never worked in before?
Yeah, it was it's quite interesting. I mean, my family's always been a big travel family. We've traveled a lot ever since I was young. You know, we took a couple trips a year, and it was something that was just ingrained in me. I love traveling, even as I grew up by myself and being here. I just thought, you know, hey, you know, why not combine both my entrepreneurial kind of itch as well as my passion for traveling and kind of build something that didn't exist. And so if you think of, you know, it's honestly, I don't think it still exists right now, but it's hard to make money doing that. Hence, we pivoted. But if you think of, you know, travel in the space, you've got TripAdvisor that's fantastic at travel planning. However, it's fantastic at travel planning when you know where you want to go. So it'll tell you a great amount of things on what to do. You've got, of course, you know, the, all kinds of booking engines and the, you know, meta search engines and stuff. And then, of course, you've got these social platforms that help you share your trip. But there was no company, at least then and perhaps even now, that helps you kind of find where to go really well. It's Google. It's your friends. It's, you know, things you've heard. And so there's a lot of this back and forth searching or discussion. And that's how you find it nowadays, you know, with other kind of mediums, I'm sure. But for us, it was a recommendation engine that was built based on high-level criteria saying, okay, I want to go with my friends. I want to go to a place that has adventure and nightlife. I have a budget of X. I want weather of Y. Where can I go? And so that kind of high-level recommendation engine that helped people kind of plot things on a map, see where they could go visually, then dig in to see the things to do, and then also book it. So our trademark at the time was plan, book, share. It was really all three things, but with the unique spin being on A, the fact that it was you know, more like at the higher level of the early stage of the journey, and then B, having an all-in-one platform to kind of do it all in one place. And so that's the kind of opportunity we saw, and it was really my passion that decided, like, is what kind of drove me to doing this.
And when you started this, so you're building out a recommendation engine, which I'm sure is not an easy task. So even getting started in this, walk me through the leaving of corporate, moving into startup. Did you bootstrap? Did you go find funding? Did you have some money saved? You hired a developer? I think that point in somebody's life is one of the most interesting points, because how people tackle it is everybody tackles it differently. But walk me through your sort of startup journey into this.
Yeah, mine was quite tricky. I mean, I started off while moonlighting at Microsoft, right? So my own free time at nights, I would kind of do this. And while I was technical in that, you know, I'd done some stuff, even just at Microsoft, I'd build like Visual Basic tools and stuff for Excel. Like, I just figured it out because I had that inclination. I was still not a coder, like, that would code this thing myself. So I had to find people. And so I found a couple of folks out in India in the beginning and kind of worked with them. And they were full-time on the company. I was part-time. So it's kind of funny now when we celebrate anniversaries, they're like 1 year ahead of me, which is kind of strange because it took me a year to quit Microsoft, but I funded it myself. So I self-funded. It was something I was lucky in my last couple roles at Microsoft. I had got some nice bonuses saved up. And so kind of used that to kind of initially fund the business. And then the day I quit, it was basically in 2012, I actually had just raised our first $250,000 from friends and family, and that's what allowed me to quit.
Awesome.
And so it was a combination of bootstrapping for a little while, building the product on the side, and then taking the jump when I had some initial investment.
So you didn't even go for a technical co-founder. You fully outsourced, you hired. How did you not get screwed by the developers that you hired, not being a developer yourself?
So interestingly enough, when I first started this, very few people noticed, I started off with a contract, like a outsourced kind of firm for the first couple of months. And, you know, I had heard good things about them, and they were good in certain ways, but in other ways they weren't. And so very quickly I started to realize that, like, this is moving kind of slow. At least I feel it's moving slow. So I hired a guy full time directly for our company who was in the same city to go and oversee them and see like, hey, are they going to be any good or do we need to bring this in-house? And fairly quickly, he realized and he confirmed like, no, we got to bring this in-house. And so within 3 months, I believe it was, we switched to kind of having a whole in-house operation. It was my people working directly for me with people I trust. And, you know, obviously that's how we kind of avoided any of the challenges that a lot of people face. Sometimes people get lucky and they do well with that kind of model. Other times they have a challenge because as a startup, you're like a tiny kind of fish, right? Yeah. If someone's a dev shop on the other end, they have all of these deals, some of them hopefully big ones for them. But then when a startup comes in with a small kind of idea, they're going to typically put their you know, lowest developers on it and not really pay as much attention to you because you don't, you know, make that much money for them. And that's where we luckily found that quick and switched to having our own fully in-house operation, which is what allowed us to be successful.
Very, very smart. I've never heard of somebody doing that. I've heard of a lot of people getting screwed by dev shops, but I've never heard of somebody hiring somebody in the city where they're at to go like audit the dev shop. That's very good.
That was my last try, right? I still wanted to give them a try. And yeah, they also were taken aback, like, wait, you're going to have somebody come sit with us? I'm like, yeah, I mean, either that or we kind of part ways now. And so they allowed it. And, you know, luckily we found out that, you know, it was the right call to just move it in-house. And I'm so glad we did. You know, that's been a major advantage for years now to have our own tech team and have such a strong tech team.
It's an argument against the gig economy. For sure, a little bit at least. Okay, so you quit after a year, you joined, mm-hmm. and then so what happened with that company? Why didn't it work out? Because it sounds like a great idea. You're right, I don't even think it still exists. So was it like no product market fit? Was addressable market too small? What was the life cycle of that company?
The problem was the revenue model per se, right? So we actually at one point had a couple hundred thousand users. We won TechCrunch a couple of times. I mean, we were starting to get kind of known again, smaller, not known, right? But it was in terms of usage, it was growing. In terms of platform, it was really cool, very different, visually very different as well. It's completely interactive on a map, even back then in 2012. However, it was really how you made money. So of course, if you had millions of users someday, you have other types of revenue opportunities like advertising. But really the core revenue model for us, and us being a Chicago company, not a well, you know, like we've over the course of our company raised some money, but not raised too much, you know. So it was not something where we had boatloads of cash that we could go out and market the heck out of this thing. And so we were doing as much guerrilla marketing efforts as we could. And if you think of travel in general, the way you make money, unless, again, you're a big company with lots of millions of users and can do advertising, is booking. With booking, you've got the Expedias and the Bookings and the Kayaks of the world, and it is it's a commodity at this point. Like, people are always price comparing. I'm sure we all do this all the time. And so when you're looking at, even though we were actually behind the scenes working with Expedia and working with several other APIs to kind of have our prices and keep them as low as pretty much anyone had, as a new user who didn't know the startup and was looking at, let's say, a $200 hotel room on Jirama versus a $200 hotel room on Expedia Booking, they're going to pick Expedia Booking more likely because those are brands that they recognize. Those are brands that they've actually, you know, can perhaps have better support and all of those things. And so we were getting a lot of people planning on our platform, but then going somewhere else to booking. And that wasn't really working well for us revenue-wise, and that's why we pivoted.
Understood. And what were some of those guerrilla marketing things that you were doing that were obviously not spending millions of dollars in ad money? Walk me through some of those, and which ones worked, which ones didn't?
You know, it was interesting. We actually did a lot of social back then. This was like earlier days of social compared to now, and you didn't have many of the platforms you have now. But Facebook was something we tried. We actually won in travel. We won the best social media startup in travel award. Wow. I remember. I think it was my Skift. We also won Cranes, Chicago's best social media startup award. Like, so we had done some interesting things with Facebook, which was essentially we tried a bunch of different types of posts. But what we found was a way to kind of get like a daily dose of inspiration was you combine a great unique picture, right? We had curators that would find these cool pictures and kind of show people, but you ask them a trivia question. And when you, like, we tried so many different variations, different things, but the thing that was very clear, like data was way better, was if you ask them a question of like, can you guess where this is, for example, and then show them a really cool picture that inspires them at the same time, the likes and the comments and stuff, the interactions were off the charts. And so that allowed us to get some really nice usage from folks like that who found us on Facebook and then kind of got to our platform, and we did other sorts of things as well. But that was, I think, one of the interesting ones.
Very interesting. Okay. So as this was growing, but obviously, and you won awards, you were in, you got some press and some PR, but it didn't really work out. So I can still see, though, that this is like the roots of consumer insights. Like, you're getting information, you're figuring out, and this is, you know, Qualsites is not that far away from how it started, really, if you think about it. Like,
if you think about it, exactly, and when you just say it right up front, it sounds like, wait, what?
Yeah.
But if you think of my...
I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, and NetSuite has been a huge supporter for entrepreneurs, for business owners, because there's one thing that we all know. Business is about making money, and it's about your bottom line. And the less you spend on the nuts and bolts of running your business, the more profits you keep. But these days, everything is costing more. Supplies, people, shipping. It squeezes your margins. And I've been there, juggling multiple systems for finance, inventory, you name it. Each with its own costs and its own set of headaches. That's why I made the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's changed our company. Think about it. NetSuite is one of the top financial systems out there. It puts your whole business on one platform: accounting, finance, the works. One data source for everyone. There's no more mismatched info. And because it's in the cloud, it slashes your IT costs. No more servers, no more updates. Just access NetSuite from anywhere. With one integrated suite, your overhead drops big time. And here's the real win: efficiency. Everything's connected in NetSuite. Costs are ridiculous lately. Find a proven way to reduce your expenses and get better performance out of your team. It's a no-brainer, and that's what NetSuite offers. Over 37,000 companies have figured this out already. You have to join them. Right now, through to April 15th, NetSuite's got an incredible, flexible financing plan. Check it out and see the savings yourself at netsuite.com/Scott Clary. That's netsuite.com/Scott Clary. Just a quick question. Have you ever had one of those oh no moments when you realize that you accidentally deleted a huge file? Or worse, your whole computer dies? I know I have. It's happened to me a lot, but don't sweat it. The sponsor of today's episode, Backblaze, they have your back. It is unlimited backups for all your Macs, your PCs, or even your whole company. And it's really affordable, under $100 a year. If you're running a business, they take the stress out of protecting everyone's data. If you need more bells and whistles for compliance, so on and so forth, they have enterprise options too. Honestly, losing data sucks, but Backblaze makes getting it back easy. They have restored billions of files. They offer tons of restore options, including rapid recovery in an event of data loss or ransomware. And you can access your backed up data from everywhere and anywhere in the world using their web app, iOS, or Android apps. It's been recommended by the New York Times, Inc., Macworld, PC World, LifeWire, Wired, Tom's Guide, 9to5Mac, and tons more. And best, you can try it fully featured with no risk at backblaze.com/story. They set up that link for all Success Story podcast listeners. That is a no-risk free trial at backblaze.com/story. Seriously, back up your stuff. I don't know about you, but the idea of being harassed, scammed, or even worse, all because somebody found my personal information online, that's terrifying. Our political opinions, our addresses, even stuff about our families, it's out there for anyone to grab. And did you know that data brokers are allowed to sell information on over 98% of Americans? It's scary stuff. That's why I've partnered with Delete Me. I personally use Delete Me. They're a big friend of the podcast because I put myself out there online. So safety is a huge concern. It's really scary how easy it is to find someone's details and information, but Delete Me creates a layer of protection that we all need. You tell Delete Me what you want gone, and they make it disappear from those sketchy data broker sites. And Delete Me doesn't stop. They constantly monitor the web to keep your information off those lists. It's like having a privacy watchdog that never sleeps. You need to take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. They're giving a special discount for all Success Story podcast listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/success and use promo code success at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/success and enter code success at checkout. joindeleteme.com/success. Today's show is brought to you by 1Password. Now listen, we all have that one friend who's constantly forgetting passwords and needing help to get into their accounts. I have a solution. It's called 1Password. 1Password is the award-winning password manager trusted by millions of users and companies like IBM and Slack to keep logins, credit cards, and other private info safe in an encrypted vault that only you can access. No more sticky notes with passwords or using the same password everywhere. I've been using 1Password for a year now, and I can't recommend it enough. It saves me time from having to reset passwords and gives me peace of mind knowing my info is secure. With convenient features like automatic password generation and login autofill, 1Password takes the hassle out of passwords. You can use it on all your devices, iOS, Android, Mac, PC. Everything syncs seamlessly. And with top-notch security audits and encryption, your data stays private. So do yourself a favor and check out 1Password today. Go to 1Password.com/Clary and get a 2-week free trial. Let 1Password remember all of your logins for you so you can remember what really matters. That's 1Password.com/Clary for 2 weeks free. Hey everyone, I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond Bourbon. Now, I don't have a lot of liquor sponsors on this show. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is actually one of my favorites. I've drank it for a few years now, and this is why we actually decided to work together. Heaven Hill Distillery, family-owned since 1935, is a great entrepreneur story too. So there's five brothers. They filled their first whiskey barrels back in 1935, and their legacy still lives on today. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is aged over 7 years. That's three more than required by the Bottled and Bond Act of 1897. This means the best quality, the best purity, and the best consistency. This is not just average bourbon. It's the winner of the double gold medals at multiple 2023 World Spirits competitions, and they've won the very prestigious Triple Still Award. It's a very big deal in the liquor and bourbon world. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond boasts an exceptionally smooth oak flavor, while its aroma offers a sweet blend of caramel and smooth vanilla. If you love bourbon, you need to try Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond. Available nationally, look for a bottle at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Original passion, right? It was all about helping myself as well, right? I was one of the prospective users, but also helping just people in general see and understand the world. Why do you travel? You travel to explore the world, right? To see other things, see new things, get exposed to new things, and also understand culture, understand other humans and behavior and all those kinds of things. And so I always had that passion. And when we pivoted, we actually pivoted two times to get to here. So we had a travel startup, then we actually pivoted to virtual travel, which is another thing right within travel before we went to Insights. But all of these three things were
what is virtual travel? this is like pre-metaverse, so I don't know what virtual travel
it is. It's so funny, right? People talk about, I mean, metaverse is a bit different, but so this is pre-Meerkat, pre-Periscope, pre-Facebook Live. Yeah. We actually now finally got a patent on this just last year, 7 years later, where we were the first to kind of allow somebody to travel somewhere virtually without physically being there. So the way it worked is you had guides, local guides, whether it was actually official tour guides, which we had many, or whether it was just locals in the city or even travelers in a city happening to be travel. We allowed them to share their experiences live. So not recorded videos. These were live videos. That's why it was pre all of like live is such a big thing now in today's world. But in 2014, when we were doing this, it wasn't a thing. And so we basically allowed people to virtually and remotely not just see what's going on somewhere else through somebody else, but it was all mobile, where somebody was walking around in that city and you could also kind of tailor your experience by saying, hey, can you turn left and show me this? Or can you kind of show me that? Or whatever it may be, right? So it was a very interactive experience. And it was really unique in that our goal was, when we realized, okay, it was hard. We realized the whole financial model would work. And even though we had users and stuff, but then we were like, what are companies in the travel industry that have actually broken out? Kayak was one, a few years before we started they started out at Kayak and Airbnb, like a new way of, searching for stuff. And then with Airbnb, a new inventory source. And we're like, what can we do if we try to stay within travel, but be truly unique? And that's what we came up with. We're like, folks like you and me, we're privileged in that we have got to see, quite a bit of the world and et cetera. But there's so many other folks out there in this world that actually would want to go places, but don't get a chance to go as much, whether it's because of financial reasons or sometimes it's logistical or even physical reasons. And so that was kind of that. It was super exciting because we were doing something truly incredibly unique. And we did it beyond B2C. We very quickly realized B2C was going to be hard because we had the same challenges in monetization. We had some interesting ideas of monetization. In fact, Amazon, by the way, recently just started a thing that is almost like an exact thing of what we were doing in 2014. It's kind of funny. Amazon Travel. I think they're piloting it. How they pilot different things. We'll see how it does. But point is, we had different ways to kind of tip guides and have private tours and stuff like that. But we realized, you know, this is going to be a very strong thing for B2B. And that's why we started to do B2B. We work with tourism organizations like State of Illinois, State of Michigan were clients of ours, for example. We worked with various different hotels for things like site inspections. So going to see a hotel for like an event per se, or even like things like we have worked with a wind farm in Australia for inspections in the wind farm. So all kinds of reasons. We even worked with NASA for virtual field trips for kids who couldn't go there and they wanted you know, virtual field trip to NASA or even museums. We had many museum clients. So it was really unique and we started to make some money there. But there too, because we had all of these different industries, right? We had tourism, we had government, we had education, we had others that we were like, this is great. There's definitely something here. We've got strong tech, but we haven't really found product market fit or found that one industry that we can really own. We're trying to be jack of all trades. And that's where we made that final pivot to QualSites.
Okay. That makes, okay. So, but you pivoted to QualSites, but you could have just, why did you not just double down on one industry? Why did you choose to pivot even like the brand, like the company name? That's major.
Yeah. So when we were looking at these and we were doing a few different things, right? So we were doing these few different verticals I just mentioned. This one time, one of our advisors connected us to this other potential investor. And within a day, he gave us, you know, a $25,000 check because he was like, you know what? I'm a researcher and I think your technology could be interesting for research, for ethnography, for helping people understand consumer behavior without physically visiting a home. I'm like, oh, that's pretty interesting. So that's how kind of the idea popped into our mind. In 2017, when we realized, like, listen, we were kind of doing this and just like not going the way we wanted to. But I mean, it was not going bad, but it was not going great. We're like, we need to figure it out and we need to kind of hone in on one vertical. We got into 500 startups out of the valley. And in that journey, what we did was like, unlike other startups, we were kind of a little bit later stage going into 500 startups, considering we had a great product and all the stuff, we had some revenue, but we didn't have the right market. And so we used that program single-handedly focused. We took seven different verticals, including Insights being one of them at the time, to then kind of do some real tests and some real market testing and conversations and a whole bunch of things that they taught us there to determine what market it would be that we would focus on. And Insights was thrown into the hat because that one investor had once dropped a check really quickly. We're like, oh, there must be something here.
Let's just try it out.
And when we did those tests, like we did, for example, email kind of, not email marketing, but like almost like sales email sequencing that's quite common nowadays, but like automated sales emails to kind of see what message is working. And it was a night and day with compared to other industries. Like the Insights folks really, it was resonating. Our message was resonating. We spoke to a whole bunch of industry experts, got some more investors as part of that. Like we're just talking to people and they were getting excited about what we're doing. We're like, there's something here and they've got real money. These CPG companies, for example, and pharma companies have real money. They have a real pain point that we can solve about being able to do research more efficiently yet being doing deep research. And that's how the whole, you know, final change came to kind of hone in into Insights.
Okay. So then, okay, perfect. So then that brings us up to QualSites. So what, so like elevator pitch, what does QualSites actually do for a company?
Yeah, so what we are is basically a consumer insights platform that allows them to understand consumer behavior, but in a much more authentic way than before. In that, these brands can see consumers how they cook or clean or shop or eat while they're doing it. Now, initially when we got into it, we were doing it live because we had built a super strong industrial-grade live video technology. But over time, what's happened is we've gone beyond just live. People can do it recorded at their own time. They can do not just videos, but also photos, audios, all these different moments that they can capture that allows brands to basically set up these tasks and activities for consumers to do. They go out and do them at their pace. They're picked based on, for example, their demographic, psychographic, geographic behavior or data. And once they're in a project, instead of going to a focus group, for example, the typical way to do qualitative research was to go into a focus group facility and kind of talk about, you know, certain things. But that was all based on recall, right? It's like saying, hey, you know, 3 weeks ago, last week when you went to the store, what did you notice first and why? And you have no memory because you don't, you know, hold that kind of information. With this, it's all as it happens, behavior focused, contextual. And along that ability to capture data more in the moment, it's all about analyzing that data much faster, because that's another challenge with qualitative or unstructured data is how do you analyze that quickly? Quant, on the other hand, quantitative like surveys are very structured, super easy to analyze and scale, qual's hard. Through a suite of AI tools, we're helping that process also be very efficient. And so in a nutshell, we help brands capture that data, analyze that data, and present that data all in one place with a variety of different methodologies to get deep and authentic insights.
Incredible. So then what are some learnings that have you pulled out of looking at doing this research this way? What are some things that brands have discovered from consumers that, for example, they wouldn't have been able to know without Qualsights?
I mean, there's a tremendous amount of things. We work with many Fortune 1000 brands on all, every week, right? Multiple times a week on a variety of different projects. I can't obviously disclose specific details.
No, of course.
We've helped with things like, new product innovations. We've helped launch new product innovations. We've helped, I can give you one example. Like there was a brand, again, I can't name names, but Fortune, 100 brand that basically had an anti-dandruff product that was looking to kind of build, they'd kind of built new innovations to kind of focus on heavy versus light sufferers of dandruff, right? But they didn't, prior to that, they hadn't kind of distinguished those. So they didn't realize how a heavy dandruff sufferer versus a light dandruff sufferer perceived their brand or perceived their category, right? And so using our platform, they were able to kind of get into the minds of consumers by having, again, two groups of consumers, one with light, one with heavy dandruff, and seeing how their flare-ups were different, getting a diary on their day-to-day over 7 days, a variety of different activities around what products they use, how they use them, how often they use them, so on and so forth. And based on that understanding, then launch different messaging to the two different groups to try and see what resonated well. And based on that feedback, optimize that messaging and then launch those innovations. So that was an example of how they improve messaging through understanding consumer behavior and perception. We've done many things where we've even had an interesting project I remember quite fondly is we had this cereal brand, again, top, Fortune 500 cereal brand that was basically looking to launch new cereal, but they wanted to kind of talk to kids. Mm-hmm. And typically, if you do an interview with kids, I mean, there's legal stuff, you have to have parents around and all that's fine. But if I'm a stranger interviewing a kid, that kid's going to, obviously very likely not be that genuine with me or going to be shy or nervous or whatever it may be because they don't know you. But with our app, it allowed the parent themselves to kind of sit next to the kid and show them these concepts and have them react to these new potential innovations. These weren't even real. They were just ideas on an image, basically, different kind of images. And the kids, of course, found it more like a game, and they were giving their candid thoughts, and it was like beautiful to see. And that allowed them to actually build and iterate on a new product. So those are just a couple examples, but we have many more things that we do, even in store or post-use, like consumption and so on.
And as you obviously you're now heavily involved in this industry, so what are some trends? Like what do companies actually pay attention to in terms of like their consumers and the behavior? What matters to companies now? Or what rather said differently, what should matter if you aren't looking at these things or certain consumer trends, what should you start looking at?
Yeah, I mean, I think as time goes by, more and more companies are realizing how important it is to truly understand their consumer and their customer's behavior, right? Not just in the traditional ways. Yes, surveys have been around forever and those are used quite heavily, but much beyond that, because a survey gives you like the what,
yeah,
but it rarely gives you the why, right? It gives you structured data, scalable data, but it's not really giving you that much depth and context. So to answer the why, there's no better way than talking to your consumers. Talking to your consumers, however, is an expensive, time-consuming, painful process, labor-intensive. And that's where our platform comes in to help you understand the consumer behavior, understand their minds without necessarily spending that as much time and effort because it's so efficient in terms of how you capture and how you analyze that data. And so in terms of trends, one big one, of course, over the last couple of years has been the pandemic, right? How do behaviors change, and what behaviors are here to stay post-pandemic now that we're, hopefully seeing, some light at the end of the tunnel here. Like, what are the behaviors that stick? And we've actually done some even internal studies on that where, people have, including myself, developed all these quirks. Yeah. Like, I still don't press an elevator button with my finger. Huh. I always use my elbow. It's just a thing that's, that's just a funny, simple example. But what else do I do? Do I clean more, right? Do people, do certain things with their food, whatever. It may be different for each industry, but what are these behaviors that are here to stay that we've picked up over the last couple of years because things were so different? And that's a very important thing for brands to have their pulse on.
I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, HubSpot. Now, if you're tired of slowing down your teams with clunky software, processes, and marketing that's difficult to scale, HubSpot is here to help you and your business grow better. With collaboration tools and built-in SEO optimizations, HubSpot CRM platform is tailor-made to help you scale your marketing with ease. Integrated calendars, tasks, and commenting help hybrid teams stay connected, while automated SEO recommendations intuitively optimize your web page content for increased organic traffic. Ditch the difficult and dial up your marketing with tools that are easy to use and easy to scale. Learn how your business can grow better at HubSpot.com. Now, I want to pivot a little bit and speak to some of the lessons that you've learned in building out the company as well. So this is incredibly interesting, and obviously this can be incredibly useful for brands, but this is something that I don't think really existed before you created it. Like I've never heard of another company that does this. So I understand the how the company sort of came to be and the story behind the company, but when you're building something in a relatively, I guess, new industry, blue ocean, I don't know what the best word for this particular tool is, but how did you innovate? How did you R&D this? How did you create this so that it was useful for brands? What's your process of iterating and improving and optimizing the actual tech behind QualSites?
Yeah, that's, I think, our biggest strength, honestly. That is our biggest strength. That's why we're here today. And we've done it multiple times, right? And all three things, we had three unique products that had some, you know, underlying connectivity between them, but completely different focuses and industries, and we still manage to be unique every time and be ahead of the competition. And that's because, you know, we do ourselves. I mean, we always know we can do more, but when we got into the insights industry and did those sales tests back at 500 startups, we started to learn and listen to our clients. Obviously, we had an idea of what would be valuable, so we kind of started with that and told them what we had, and then kind of listened. And we put our product out there, we had them try it, and we listen to feedback very, very, very much. And so we monitor how people are using the platform, but more importantly, ask. Like more than anything else, we're talking to our clients and encouraging them to always give us feedback. And we, till today, we're pushing updates to our platform twice a week. So we're very, very fast in terms of how we iterate. And so we're always improving. Sometimes, of course, there's these major updates. Other times it's smaller ones, but it's always, we're always kind of staying ahead of the game, always trying to think of what's next. And a big, big part of that has been really listening to our clients and at the same time, not really looking at competitors. You know, what we try not to do is not look at what else is out there, right? And this is something I found has worked at least well for me personally, is both times it was industries I had no connection to, right? Yes, I had some passion, but no connection to. But as I spoke to people, right, and in the case of QualSites, speaking to customers, I was not a researcher, but I kind of gleaned so much that there's many times in the future people ask me like, oh, you must be a researcher. And I'm like, no, not at all. You know, I'm just a good listener. Mm-hmm. But we listen and kind of take that in, but we don't have the biases. Like if I was a researcher, I think I wouldn't be able to have done this as well, because then I would have kind of been blocked in some ways of, okay, this is what's normal, this is what's possible. I had no such baggage with me. And so therefore I could go into an industry, understand what clients need and build something, because we had a very strong tech team and product is our strength, and then see how it works. And then keep building. And then, you know, once we had a certain stage, look at competition, see like, okay, where are we compared to the rest? And we were almost always ahead. And that's really where it was really cool to be able to do that, just purely based on customer feedback and our own kind of ideas.
And talk to me about product development. Talk to me about some of the best practices that you've implemented, because obviously product development has been key to your success. And this is something that I think you've sort of shown again and again, but How do you develop this product so that it does serve the needs of your customers? You said feedback loops are obviously important, but some other good like product development learnings.
Yeah, for us, I mean, we're always, we're listening to customers like we talked about, but B, we are also monitoring how customers use things to then come up with what's next. We're also always trying to figure out how can we do something better, right? Like, for example, if you think of AI, over the last few years, 10 years ago, right, if you tried to kind of do what we're doing today, probably couldn't do it well, at least the other part, A, because, you know, maybe the smartphone penetration wasn't so high, and then B, in terms of the AI piece, that was actually something that AI has kind of progressed so much over the years. And so kind of keeping abreast of the latest technologies, keeping abreast of what we can do kind of to move the needle every single day or every single week is another key part of this, to kind of understand, okay, hey, now that technology is getting better, we can help them take this unstructured data and do this and this and that with it to actually make it much more fast for them to analyze that data. And we've kind of been able to use, you know, piggyback off, you know, for example, a whole bunch of innovations in AI. Let's talk about, for example, NLP has been a big thing. Natural language processing, of course, has continually kind of improved. And you've got the big five, you know, companies kind of working on it. So it's rare that you'll see a young startup that will come out and beat them at the core mm-hmm. of AI. So therefore, we didn't go after the core of AI. Instead, we took all of their core AI capabilities, combined them, and added our own flavor and kind of fit in the gaps. And that's what, for example, allowed us to have the best-in-class AI capability without having to spend billions of dollars that we obviously didn't have to build it from scratch.
And how do you mentioned one thing that was very interesting as well. So the monitoring of how people actually use the tools that you build out. So how do you monitor them? Is there widgets that you build out, or is it something that you've coded internally that tracks user behavior within the app? How do you actually get that data?
Yeah, we have a bunch of ways to track data within the app, see what's our most popular use features and what's not. You know, there's always room for improvement even there, but we have kind of done that. There's also ways, for example, on our app that we track. Actually, we have screenshots of how people are using our app. And so we see that, and it's not even screenshots, actually, it's like basically videos. But we, and of course, any private stuff is kind of taken away, like if they're putting in like an email, for example. But otherwise, it kind of shows the entire flow of using the app. And that allows us actually in two ways. One is if there is a bug, we can check that and say, okay, hey, where did they get stuck? Is this a user error? Is it a bug or something else? If someone complained, let's say someone reached out about like some support question, but it also helps us understand, okay, hey, maybe people are missing this new feature that we have there, or this can be optimized and so on. So being able to actually see it, even in those kind of ways, is quite useful beyond just looking at the data.
And then how did you actually, so now you have a great product. How did you actually find that product market fit? How did you close your first customers for QualSites? How did you scale the company? Was it pure sales and marketing? Did you go raise more money and then you reinvested that? What was that process?
Yeah, no, we were very, very scrappy. So 2018 is when we pivoted officially to QualSite. We changed the name, I think, even like September 2018, but we pivoted to Insights in early 2018. And that first year was honestly all about just getting our name out as much as we could. And we didn't really have much money to do so, but we were like reaching out, using our network and kind of getting a bunch of calls. And we kind of used those calls again to learn, you know, how our products stuck and what else we could do. And in that first year, because we came in with this live video technology, when we would show clients our tech, they would just be blown away. They'd be like, wow, we've never seen anything like it, where people can be like walking around and you can kind of see them and kind of be there without being there. It was like so far ahead, which was a good thing, but also a bad thing. Because most of the time, they were very excited. I mean, all the time they were very excited, but most of the time the reaction was, oh, this is amazing. Never seen anything like it. Let me think about the right project. And the next time we have the right project, we'll get back to you. So what we realized after enough of those folks saying, this is amazing, but we have to wait for the right project, we're like, we're too ahead of the game. It's something that people are interested in, they aspire to, but this is not something, this feels niche right now. Mm-hmm. It's too far ahead. And so what can we do to kind of really kind of be better? And that's where we realized is, unlike in quant, you've got Qualtrics, you've got SurveyMonkey, you've got big players, including some startups that are doing really well and catching up. In qual, on the other hand, in our industry, yeah, there's a few startups, but there's no clear leader. There's not one company that anyone can tell you is the leader in qual. And we're like, wait a second, why do we want to be this live video qualitative ethnography kind of leader, which we already were instantly because there was nobody there, still isn't, but how can we kind of really own qual? How can we be the Qualtrics or SurveyMonkey of the qualitative industry? And that's where that 2018, late in 2018, early 2019, we started to build horizontally and add the recorded videos and the photos and the barcode capture and the screen capture and all of the methodologies we knew that were important to have a one-stop shop toolkit for any qualitative researcher to just have one platform, because the market is fragmented. You have startups doing one little thing, doing it well, but doing one little thing. And therefore, as a client, as a brand, you'd have to actually end up going through multiple vendors to have these deep insights. Mm-hmm. We said, why not have it on one platform? And then there's all these benefits to mix and match these methodologies in one place, plus have all the AI to help it analyze it faster. And so we built like the ultimate tool in learning from customers, even customers who didn't buy from us or didn't buy from us yet. Went really back in 2019, and that's where we started to kind of get more clients pick up. And it was all through either just reaching outbound cold, which worked really well. We practiced that at 500 startups, and they taught us that and worked really well. Initially, it's harder now because most people are doing it, right? So there's a lot more noise. But we also, you know, got lucky at a couple conferences and events. We met some really solid clients, and then they became my anchor clients. And so that's how it all began. And then, of course, it started to snowball from there.
Did you? That's actually very interesting. So would you actually recommend that to companies? Because you almost... You built this leading product in a certain niche, and then you almost went into more competitive industries just so it would be easier to sell. Like, it's almost the opposite of what most people, I assume, would think. Oh, I want to go into Blue Ocean. I'm a leading product, and I'm so innovative. No one's ever done it before. It seems like such a great idea. There's no competition. So you actually built out a core set of features that infringed on a whole bunch of other companies that were already in very well-established markets. And that's actually how you got momentum.
It is. Because we were able to kind of take, for example, an interview, right? An interview and focus group, if you ask me, like, I think those are nice for certain things. But for many of the behavioral insights that we encourage our clients to get these deeper, more authentic insights, those are not the right tools at all. That said, our platform does offer and is used for interviews and focus groups. But many of those clients are bought in to start with that, where they're like, oh, I could use like a Zoom or any other kind of tool nowadays, right? To like to do an interview, but it doesn't have research features like a back room and all the stuff that they would need. So we beat out the standard tools with that. However, where we really get them is like, did you know you can analyze this data so much faster with our AI? So then they'll look at IA and they'll be like, wow, yeah, man, this is so much better than my handwritten notes and all the other, you know, older processes I used to do. And now we're like, oh, and now, like a couple of weeks or a few months later, did you know that you could also do this without even doing an interview and actually see somebody cook or seeing somebody open your product and unbox it and use your product or whatever it may be without having to do an interview, because they can do it at their own pace. And you can have many more consumers, so a larger sample size, and analyze it as fast, because now you know our AI, how good it is. They're like, yeah. And so you kind of get them in on where they are and upgrade them to what the future is that we already had built. And so that's sort of been our strategy. And Sometimes you go that way. Other times you've got companies who are super ahead of the game and they get the cutting edge stuff and they'll come right there. But many of the companies still need, they're somewhere within that spectrum. And so our offering supports any company, regardless of where they are in that spectrum.
Very smart. And after you, obviously, you took this to market, and then you started to build out all these ancillary features that actually allowed you to capture more customers and sell. Did you go and raise more money, or did you just grow with your own revenue?
No, we did. In the last couple of years, we've been going with our own revenue, which is great. But prior to that, yes, we did. So we haven't, in the grand scheme of things, though, since 2012, it's going to be, in 2 months, it's going to be 10 years, which is insane.
It is insane. That's a long time.
But in 10 years, we've raised just about 3.5 million, okay. Not including a current round. But essentially, so that's... what we did. So we were very capital efficient while we'd raised 3.5. It was over 10 years. That's
it's not bad.
Very, very, exactly. It's very capital efficient for what we've been doing.
Very good. Okay. And where do you want to take this? Like, what's the end goal for you as an entrepreneur? You're 10 years in. That's a long time for an entrepreneur. So where do you want to go with it?
Yeah, persistence has been also a big, advantage of ours. You know, it's been required, of course. And it's something, it's something I'm proud of, right? But we knew, we wouldn't have been this persistent if we didn't know we wanted something. And now, finally, the results have shown. You know, we're the fastest growing company in Illinois. We are 282 in the Inc. 5000, and you know, things are going really well. We've had 20x growth in the last 3 years in terms of revenue. Our goal, though, is we're not. You know, we're not one of those where I didn't. If I wanted to kind of try and flip this, we had great IP all along the way that I could have, you know, sold for a decent sum, and at least for personally been, you know, quite set. But that's not what my goal with this is. Money has not been the primary factor. Of course, money helps, and that's a byproduct. Our bigger vision here is to kind of build a product that truly makes an impact in this world. It really, it's cheesy, but in our industry, to kind of really kind of change the way people build. Like, I'm all about innovation, right? That's my biggest passion is tech innovation. And if we can help clients in a variety of industries help be better innovators, which then in turn helps consumers have better products, that would be the ultimate goal, and that success for us. And of course, the byproduct of doing that would result in great value to all of our investors and ourselves. But the primary kind of driver is that.
And future predictions for consumer insight trends in the next 5 to 10 years, how granular are we going to be able to get in terms of what we can understand from a customer? Like it's very topical now, like how much data we can get from people. So where do you think this is going?
It's insane. And maybe in a future one, I'll disclose more because we have already the next innovation that
good. Is we'll do another out. One. We'll do another show.
I think we're launching, it's within, of course, now we're not pivoting anymore, but within our industry, it's funny you use the word granularity because that's the word we use, you know, behind the scenes right now. We're still in stealth mode with it, but it's just a whole new level that's never been remotely seen before. And so we're super excited about it. But it's something where, unlike like the Facebook kind of model, right, where you have, you know, the social media platform and all these users and you get data. And then, of course, the issue right now is, A, how much data are you collecting? And then B, you're not getting paid for your own data and these companies are making billions off of you. Our goal is very different. Our goal is people, and we already, like, people get paid to do this research studies. They get paid quite handsomely, actually, way more than a survey would give you, because surveys are, you know, cents. This is, you know, people would make a significant amount of money working, you know, on a platform if they get selected for projects, that is. And so helping people make money for their data, but them sharing data that is not private per se. It's like, you know, things that I'm willing to share because it's, you know, how I use certain products or how I, you know, do a certain activity at home or how I shop for certain products. So it's just kind of understanding my mind and my behavior in a non-intrusive way and making money as a result. And so therefore, I think there's a capability, without going into technical details, there's some really interesting things that are going to come both from us and I think in the industry as a whole that take advantage of that and be on the right side of the whole privacy equation, be on the right side of the paying consumers for their data equation, and at the same time bringing value to clients to understand behavior and helps, hence building better products that help everybody who uses those products.
Sorry about that. No, a few things to close out, just so I want to get some of your socials and your website, but then I want to do some rapid fire questions as well. But before we go into that, just some closing thoughts, anything else that you wanted to bring up about QualSites or anything that you've learned from your experience building out and pivoting three times and all these different entrepreneurial lessons, floor is yours.
I think the thing I always recommend, you know, Yungo, I got a lot of help along the way, right? So much advice, so much help, and it's great, you know, to have that. And I think the thing I personally learned and I always like to share is there's like the three P's, is what I call it, of an entrepreneur or of this journey. One is passion, right? So pick something you're passionate about. If you don't, you're not going to survive 10 years. no chance, right? And sometimes you need to survive 10 years or many more, right? So that's important so that you're excited about what you're doing for the long term. Persistence, right? You're going to have a lot of things in your way, a lot of ups and downs. You know, we ourselves have, for example, multiple times in the course of this last 10 years, got down to our last, you know, couple thousand dollars in the bank, right? And so you'll face some really crazy challenges and some, you'll get a lot of no's, but you have to stay persistent through that as long as, of course, you have a strong belief in your product and you know you've got something. And then finally, I think the ability to pivot, the third P, pivot, is another important one. Like it's rare to find companies today who start doing this and by the end of their journey, stay doing that. It's almost always some sort of, whether it's a drastic pivot like ours or it's other kind of iterations, it's rare that you start with something, you stick with that. And so your ability to learn, your ability to kind of adapt to the market, to sometimes even cannibalize yourself, is going to be very important to kind of stay ahead of the game. And so those are the three things
that typically all right. Advice. So where do people go and connect with you? All of your social, your personal socials or the website, you know, all that stuff, QualSite socials, any links you want to drop?
Yeah. So for me, it's LinkedIn, you know, so Nihal Advani is, URL/ Nihal Advani is me on LinkedIn. And then of course, QualSites is everything QualSites. So you've got LinkedIn, you've got, I think we're doing some stuff finally on Twitter now. We're not as active yet, but those are perhaps the two most easiest ways to find the company. Perfect. As well.
Okay, let's do a couple rapid fire. So the biggest challenge that you've overcome in your personal or professional life, what was it? How did you overcome it? And what did you learn from it?
You know, it's actually one that happened just past year, and it was both. It was actually, we lost our CTO this past year due to COVID, you know, in May. And so It was a terrible time, very tragic. I was young, the entire team kind of went through this. And for me, I mean, for 9 years of the 10, he was my colleague and friend. My first call in the morning, my last call in the night. And so very, very tough. The team just really got together. And, we didn't have much control over what happened. Obviously, we tried everything we could to give him the care he needs. But, what had to happen happened. And now we're kind of re-energized to kind of do this, not just for all of our own ambitions and goals, but also for him. And it's been amazing to see the team to come together and really have an additional driving force behind them and kind of just do this in his honor. So
that's tough. That's about that. But glad to hear that the team got through that okay. That's not easy, especially for you. If you had to choose one person, obviously there's been multiple, but pick one person who's had an incredible impact on your career. Who was it and what did they teach you?
I'd say for my advisors, I've had many people who've impacted me in many ways. One of our advisors, Mohan Sawhney, he's actually one of the top professors at Kellogg. I think he's Associate Dean of Innovation now at Kellogg. And he's been my advisor from the early travel days. And he's kind of really helped us. He's one of those really big thinking guys. I'll take maybe a few weeks to come up with something really nice. I'll start to talk to him about it. He'll get it in 2 minutes. He'll get there. He's a different level. And it's just amazing to be able to ideate with folks like that. We have some amazing advisors, including him, involved. And to be able to ideate from him, learn from him. And he's been really, really generous with his connections. He's helped us bring on investors. He's introduced us to investors, introduced us to clients, because he gets so many folks that he, come to him and learn from him. And so I think all around, he's one of those advisors that has kind of helped us in every way possible. And I strongly encourage startups to get active advisors and, advisors like that who are willing to raise, pull up their sleeves to help you.
Yeah, perfect. No, I agree. A book or podcast you'd recommend people go check out that's had an impact on your life?
I actually don't read full books. It's kind of funny. I mean, I'm very, very, I have crazy work hours. But what I do is this app called Blinkist, where it's basically an audiobook, but it's also 15 minutes, 8 to 15 minutes. And so using that, I do a bunch. And a recent one I thought that was really great was Blitzscaling.
Very good.
Very helpful.
If you could tell your 20-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
Quit faster, start faster. While there was a lot of benefits and I really enjoyed Microsoft, I have great things to say about them. If I had to do it over, I would do it faster. So that would be my advice to myself.
Yeah. And then last question, what does success mean to you?
Yeah, I think we covered some of that, but it's really, for me, it's I really want to make an impact in this world. I want to, build an innovation that kind of helps companies and others. That to me is successful, where we can be recognized for all of our great tech and innovation that helps other companies innovate. That's the number one driver for me.
I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, and NetSuite has been a huge supporter for entrepreneurs, for business owners, because there's one thing that we all know. Business is about making money, and it's about your bottom line. And the less you spend on the nuts and bolts of running your business, the more profits you keep. But these days, everything is costing more. Supplies, people, shipping. It squeezes your margins, and I've been there, juggling multiple systems for finance, inventory, you name it. Each with its own costs and its own set of headaches. That's why I made the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's changed our company. Think about it. NetSuite is one of the top financial systems out there. It puts your whole business on one platform, accounting, finance, the works. One data source for everyone. There's no more mismatched info. And because it's in the cloud, it slashes your IT costs. No more servers, no more updates. Just access NetSuite from anywhere. With one integrated suite, your overhead drops big time. And here's the real win. Efficiency. Everything's connected in NetSuite. Costs are ridiculous lately. Find a proven way to reduce your expenses and get better performance out of your team. It's a no-brainer, and that's what NetSuite offers. Over 37,000 companies have figured this out already. You have to join them. Right now, through to April 15th, NetSuite's got an incredible, flexible financing plan. Check it out and see the savings yourself at netsuite.com/ScottClary. That's netsuite.com/ScottClary. Just a quick question. Have you ever had one of those oh no moments when you realize that you accidentally deleted a huge file? Or worse, your whole computer dies. I know I have. It's happened to me a lot, but don't sweat it. The sponsor of today's episode, Backblaze, they have your back. It is unlimited backups for all your Macs, your PCs, or even your whole company, and it's really affordable, under $100 a year. If you're running a business, they take the stress out of protecting everyone's data. If you need more bells and whistles for compliance, so on and so forth, they have enterprise options too. Honestly, losing data sucks, but Backblaze makes getting it back easy. They have restored billions of files. They offer tons of restore options, including rapid recovery in an event of data loss or ransomware. And you can access your backed up data from everywhere and anywhere in the world using their web app, iOS, or Android apps. It's been recommended by the New York Times, Inc., Macworld, PC World, LifeWire, Wired, Tom's Guide, 9to5Mac, and tons more. And best, you can try it fully featured with no risk at backblaze.com/story. They set up that link for all Success Story podcast listeners. That is a no-risk free trial at backblaze.com/story. Seriously, back up your stuff. I don't know about you, but the idea of being harassed, scammed, or even worse, all because somebody found my personal information online, that's terrifying. Our political opinions, our addresses, even stuff about our families, it's out there for anyone to grab. And did you know that data brokers are allowed to sell information on over 98% of Americans? It's scary stuff. That's why I've partnered with Delete Me. I personally use Delete Me. They're a big friend of the podcast because I put myself out there online. So safety is a huge concern. It's really scary how easy it is to find someone's details and information, but Delete Me creates a layer of protection that we all need. You tell Delete Me what you want gone and they make it disappear from those sketchy data broker sites. And Delete Me doesn't stop. They constantly monitor the web to keep your information off those lists. It's like having a privacy watchdog that never sleeps. You need to take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. They're giving a special discount for all Success Story podcast listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/success and use promo code success at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/success and enter code success at checkout. joindeleteme.com/success.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, I just want to take a second and thank the sponsor of today's episode, Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond Bourbon. Now, I don't have a lot of liquor sponsors on this show. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is actually one of my favorites. I've drank it for a few years now, and this is why we actually decided to work together. Heaven Hill Distillery, family-owned since 1935, is a great entrepreneur story too. So there's five brothers. They filled their first whiskey barrels back in 1935, and their legacy still lives on today. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond is aged over 7 years. That's three more than required by the Bottled and Bond Act of 1897. This means the best quality, the best purity, and the best consistency. This is not just average bourbon. It's the winner of the double gold medals at multiple 2023 World Spirits competitions, and they've won the very prestigious Triple Still Award. It's a very big deal in the liquor and bourbon world. Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond boasts an exceptionally smooth oak flavor, while its aroma offers a sweet blend of caramel and smooth vanilla. If you love bourbon, you need to try Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond. Available nationally, look for a bottle at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.